Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to all of our listeners and to our family. You have tuned into Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Economic Development Empowerment Co-op Thursday night talk show and radio program. Welcome. I am Nanana. I am a board member of Us Lifting Us, and I am going to be your guide this evening through our Dare to Win conversation that we are going to have, and I invite all of you to please participate in this empowering conversation. Dare to Win is on every Thursday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. This is a very sober discussion of the systems and institutions necessary for real economic empowerment of our people. This is what we are about in Us Lifting Us, and our mission statement is that we will build, maintain, and pass to future generations the machinery of economic self-determination. That is what we are bound to do. That is what we have started doing, and that is what we will continue to do. So joining me this evening to help guide and to stimulate and generate our conversation, there is another Us Lifting Us board member, Brother Kimbizi, who will be a major player in this conversation. Brother Kimbizi, would you like to say a word to welcome our audience?
Greetings, Sister Nanana. Greetings, family. It's good to be on the call tonight. I'm excited. We've got a lot of important information to share. Let's just get to it.
Sounds like you are excited and you're ready to go. That's great. That's great. And once again, we are definitely inviting those of you who can tune in to please call in at 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. and press the number 1 on your dial pad on your phone, and that will alert us and show up on our screen that you would like to ask a question or make a comment, and we will certainly make that time available for you to do so. All right, Brother Kimbizi, as you said, let's just go ahead and get right to it. And to set the stage for our dialogue and our discussion this evening, I just want to start out by saying and suggest to our listening audience that what we are going to be focusing on this evening might be called a value-based conversation around economics. What are the underlying values that drive particular economic systems, and how do we see that reflected in certain things that go on within our environments on a political and a social level, and just taking a closer look at how our values can be more instilled and reflected in an economic system that is more looking like what we want it to look like and definitely more beneficial to us. So to get that conversation started, and I'm going to ask Brother Kimbizi to comment on this, there have been some recent events that, well, actually have been going on. We've seen it on the news, and people have been reading about it in many different formats concerning the situation with immigrants attempting to come into the U.S. And in their attempt to cross the border, the separation of the families that has occurred, literally taking the children and putting them in one camp and forcibly separating them from the parents. And in looking at that, you know, many people have very strong opinions about whether or not this is appropriate, is it right, is it wrong, what are the legalities around it, so on and so forth. But what I'd like you to comment on, Brother Kimbizi, is how do you see this this whole issue with immigration and what's happening at our borders and what Trump has sanctioned? How do you see that linking with the current economic system that we here in the U.S. are you know, living under, and that is capitalism? And just tell us your thoughts around that and how you see that relating to values. So I'll just open that up for you right now with that comment.
Thank you, Nanana. And it's amazing that we've all seen these horrific images and heard the audio tapes of the trauma that's being inflicted upon these children as they're being wrenched from the arms of their parents. What we have to understand is that there's a value conflict taking place as we witness what is going on at the border. And what I mean by that, clearly the value of black and brown people is being negated. What is the value that's being upheld in all of this confusion at the border and the very, very painful things that are going on, what it's really heralding is this rise of white nationalism and white supremacy. In other words, the only lives that have value and worth are those of white people. The other thing that's going on is the value of profits over people. The capitalism, the system that you pointed out, it the goal is maximum profit at all costs, at all times. And so whatever it takes to maintain the system of capitalism, which is its money-making machine, anything that gets in the way of that will be crushed and hurt. To kind of put this in some perspective for us, I want to share a couple of sources that I've been looking at. One of them, just so we understand that we are engaged in global warfare and that this system is waging war against black and brown people. If we don't understand that, then we will be confused by the cascade of events that we're witnessing on the television. And they're coming fast and furious because it's part of the shock doctrine of capitalism. And it's designed to destabilize and to demoralize the American population. So we want to understand the psychological and the economic thrusts that are being made against us so we can remain centered and grounded and come to a solution that will actually make a difference for us. So,
okay.
For example, what I want to share is one is a book called Black Economics by Jawanza Kanjufu, written in 1991. And he writes, in the powerful book by Sidney Wilhelm, Who Needs the Negro?, he raises the question, why were Negroes brought to this country? Of course, the obvious answer is we were brought to this country to work. Then he raises the next question. Does that reason exist today? If you look at the African-American community and the unemployment problems nationwide, the answer to the second question is a resounding no. And then he raises the last question. What do you do with the people that you no longer need? We are in an era now where black labor is no longer necessary to run the economy, and therefore we have become expendable. He goes on to say, for example, in 1910, 90% of African-American children had their fathers at home. In 1960, the figure dropped slightly to 80%. In 1990, the figure had declined to 38%. Those three time periods represent the three waves in the American economy. The first wave was agricultural. The second, industrialism. And the third is post-industrialism, automation, and the computer. So here we are in the third wave of this evolution of capitalism, which now is driven by computers, automation, and so we are in the post-industrial period. The system no longer needs manual labor, and therefore the unemployment rates in black communities across the country have jumped into double digits, and that's where they remain. And that's where they will remain. So we have to understand that there is an economic urgency that we must face. We no longer occupy the position that we once did, and therefore because we have become expendable, then we begin to understand why it is open season and police across the country can shoot innocent black boys at point-blank range almost with impunity. And we're traumatized by that. We grieve by that. We witness the killing of our children. It tears us up emotionally. But we don't understand that not only is that happening right now, it will probably get worse unless we do something extremely dramatic to mm-hmm. alter that reality. There's one other source I want to share, Sister Nanana, and then I'll pause for comment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book written in 2007 by Naomi Klein called Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. So keep in mind, we're in this latest phase of capitalism, automation, robotics, computerization. And what she has hit upon is that to get governments back on the right track, Friedman, in his first popular book, Capitalism and Freedom, laid out what he would what would become the global free market rulebook, and the U.S. would form the economic agenda of the neoconservative movement. So the forces backing Trump, this is their agenda. First, governments must remove all rules and regulations standing in the way of the accumulation of profits. That goes back to what I was saying about profits over people. Second, they should sell off any assets they own that corporations could be running at a profit. And third, they should dramatically cut back funding of social programs. So this is the three-part formula: deregulation, privatization, and cutbacks. That's the reality that the Trump regime represents. And make no mistake, a lot of attention is focused on Trump. Trump is merely the symbol of this economic agenda that is now engulfing the country. The goal is deregulation. You know, cut back. Don't bother the corporations. Let them do whatever they want to do to make profit and to make maximum profit. Sell off the things that used to be run by the government. So national park system, that will soon be on the chopping block. The United States Post Office, they've been nibbling away at that for a long time. The healthcare system, privatize that. And what is happening is that black people are being pushed further and further to the margins. And we do not understand that this is an economic assault, and therefore we must have an economic response. So in the face of this shock doctrine, this disaster capitalism that is predatory and it feeds off of the various crises, both natural. So if you have hurricanes like Irma and Maria and Harvey that devastated, you know, just swaths of cities and towns and islands. So as soon as those disasters hit, they then swoop in with their various corporations to make profit on that, knowing that the people are demoralized and dazed from the event itself. And so we see this predatory economic activity, and that's why we and Us Lifting Us recognize the need for us as a community to make a power move rather than a money move. And by that, what I mean is we cannot continue to think that this system is going to somehow right itself and become just. It's not in its DNA to do that. And if you think about it, capitalism has always thrived on black labor. During the slave trade, the capital was black labor, was black slave bodies. And that's part of America's DNA. And that's why appealing to the conscience of white America to treat black and brown people equitably, it just goes against their grain. They've been accustomed to exploiting us to meet their needs, to clean their kitchens and do all of those things. They only see us as serving their needs. And when we become expendable, they just push us out of the way. So our challenge is to build an economic system that we control that will allow us to employ our youth and to begin to harness the tremendous economic wealth flowing through our fingers every year into a system that benefits our community. Let me pause.
Wow. Thank you so much for opening this discussion this evening with those very solidly documented, researched, and very powerful comments. For some of us, I'm sure it has been a real wake-up call to come face to face with the reality that this culture, this society that we live in, literally has no more use for us. And as the author of that book or that document that you quoted from said, what do you do with a people that you no longer need? And so that in and of itself should be very sobering for all of us to take a step back and to truly understand that there is a value system at work here that indicates very clearly and very strongly that we are not valued. So looking for equitable treatment, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen because there is no benefit. There is no benefit. Whereas we come from a base that says that all humanity is valuable, there is a system at work that says that the only humanity that is valuable is humanity that can serve me, do my bidding, or somehow be beneficial in the system that I am in control of and that I have in place. So these are very powerful concepts and that we're talking about this evening. And so we would like to have you join our conversation. Please call in and press the number 1 on your dial and join our conversation. The call-in number is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And this is the Dare to Win, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative Thursday evening radio program, where we talk about some very powerful, sobering discussions about the systems and institutions that are necessary for real economic empowerment for our people, and we examine those systems and institutions of the past that have not worked and those that are currently in place that continue to not be beneficial, not only to us, but on a global basis as well. And so we're picking that apart piece by piece, and then we are going be sharing more about what Us Lifting Us ULU has to offer as an economic development cooperative that is the answer that will assist us in this struggle so that we can build in and maintain the livelihood that we are supposed to have. Thank you for those opening comments, Brother Kimbizi, and I would definitely agree with you as far as the reflection of the values that are reflected,
you know,
in the actions and behaviors. Yes, go ahead.
That's very important, Sister Nanana. What we really have to come to grips with, I think, is all this week they've been talking about how these children have been separated from their parents, that many of them have become listless. They're seeing all the signs of trauma. All of the psychologists know that these kinds of first of all, many of these people have had a very harrowing 1,000-mile journey from South America through Mexico to the American border. So they're already exhausted just from having completed that part of the journey. Then to get to the border where they're thinking there's hope and to have that so cruelly dashed and then be wrenched out of the arms of their parents. So the experts know that this is trauma to these children. These children are going to be scarred for the rest of their lives. And in spite of that, there's still a debate going back and forth about whether or not this is a good thing, or in other words, we don't see a national uproar insisting that this stop. Yeah, there was noise but it was like, you know, somehow modify this. It certainly there's an easier way to secure the quote unquote secure the borders, but the what the Trump administration and those who back him are doing, they're sending a very strong message to the country and to Latin America. And that message is that the problem, why they are attacking the Mexican and the Hispanic immigrants, is because their research data has shown them that by 2030, black and brown communities will be the majority in America, and that white folks will be a minority in America. That is the fear that's driving this immigration response, both against the Muslim ban and against Hispanic immigrants that would be coming in from Mexico. But black folks need to be very clear about this. If they are willing to do this to these other communities of color, as soon as they complete that devastation, guess who's going to be next in their target? So that what is going on at the border and what is being done to the through the Muslim ban is targeted to all people who are not white. And at the base of that group of folk is black folks. So this is something that we should be very aware of, vigilant about, and be putting plans in motion to respond in ways that can not only guarantee our survival, but enable us to prosper in the midst of this kind of confusion. But the point I wanted to make, Sister Nanana, was the point about values. When we see that kind of behavior for people who can do that to another human being, that is a very different kind of orientation to what life is all about. And to your point, African people, black folks, have always had the idea that all life is valuable and all life should be preserved and treasured and allowed to develop and grow. So the only way that value will actually be able to be practiced in the United States of America, we have to build an economic system that enables that value to stand up on the sidewalk. That's what an economy does. It allows the value system to walk up and down the street. You need an economy so you can practice your values. So if capitalism is practicing the values of killing and selfishness and greed and violence and lies and immorality and sexual infidelity and all the stuff that goes with that, if those are the values that capitalism is practicing, then we must change the economic system. The only way we can get to peace and sustainability and decency and some sense of morality as a society, we have to change the economic system. That's why Us Lifting Us is making the argument to build a cooperative economy that we own and control, rather than continuing to struggle inside of a capitalistic economy that we don't control and will never control. The weakness of capitalism is that it is privately owned and controlled. It has no place for the masses of the people other than to be consumers. We are building a system that is owned by the community. It is everyone has ownership in it, and everyone benefits from it. It's such a radical and paradigm shift that it really takes a moment to step back and wrap our minds around it. But it is absolutely imperative that we do this if our children are going to have a future in this country.
Mm-hmm. you've made some excellent points, Brother Kambizi, just excellent. And I see that we have a caller that either wants to ask a question or make a comment. So, excuse me, I'm going to open the line for that caller. And then I want to get into talking more, take a little segue into talking more about solutions and the sense of urgency around what those solutions could look like. But let's go ahead. I'm going to open the line for caller 1570. Caller, do you have a question or a comment you would like to make? The line is open.
Well, yes, good evening. It's an interesting discussion. As an economist who just came back from Ghana and has worked with cooperatives, Brother Kambizi, I think is his name, is a bit confused by making the statement that black people are being marginalized. I was just with millions of Ghanaians who do business with the Chinese, who do business with the Germans. They have their own country, and they set up co-ops. In fact, I was there dealing with the co-op. Apparently there are some misconceptions, Brother Kambizi, of how you view capitalism. One of the things is that you cannot separate yourself out from a market. I think that those who've tried have failed. The question is how you maintain your identity within that marketplace and build in spite of other people's models. For example, the coffee shop that's in Atlanta, and right now I'm not in Atlanta, but I'm from Atlanta, is a beautiful thing. It is competing with Starbucks and other like models, but because of the values of the people that support it, it is thriving. And so the decision to emulate a coffee shop, which is part of a larger economic firmament, was a correct one. Just as if the Uplifting Us Cooperative got a Firestone franchise that catered to people of color, its operation, its pricing to serve its community would benefit its community, although it is part of the larger economic firmament. I believe you may recognize my voice, ma'am. I had been on this show once before.
Would you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Sure, it's Malcolm Ashley. I'm calling you from Connecticut. And I'm an economist and a systems engineer. And coming back from Africa and having dealt with the brothers in Cape Verde and Liberia, there are millions of Africans who work with the other larger economy, but their retention of their national identity and spiritual identity is in question. Therefore, I would take umbrage with Mr. Kwesi saying blacks are being pushed to the margin, when if you turn on the television, you see Shaq and you see so many black folks that are marketing either their products or others' products. And so I would argue conversely, no, we aren't being pushed to the margins. We are the fulcrum of this society. The question is how we harness that to direct those resources into our communities, as you have rightly pointed out, instead of those resources that we have being dissipated. But you spoke to the idea of the African model, having come from Africa recently and seeing the Tomb of Du Bois, who even under Jim Crow America, with President Wilson that segregated this country, encouraged black men to fight in the military. I'm a veteran because it established our role in a larger firmament where those skills of fighting and building could be imparted in our community as part of a larger economic order. He was not wrong. And so this dire message that we are on our last leg, I think, is the wrong message. It is not borne out by the facts. Black unemployment is at its lowest level in history.
In what country?
In this country. In this country.
Black unemployment is at what level? What level?
Black unemployment, not the U16 unemployment, but the registered black unemployment recorded by the Department of Labor is at its lowest level. in Atlanta,
and what
Georgia.
What level is that? What level is that?
It's under 4%.
Are you
an economist? Do you work with the data? We can have that discussion if you prefer, but I would urge you.
We can go to the Department of Labor and get the statistics on black youth unemployment. It's not 4%. You know better than that.
I didn't say black youth unemployment. I said black unemployment, which includes
adults.
We're
talking about black unemployment and what percentage of black youth. Brother Malcolm, I appreciate your comment. I understand you have an economic background.
We're just talking facts here. What the facts are, unemployment varies in different regions of the country. Black unemployment is high in Detroit. It's lower in Washington, D.C. It's higher depending upon the marketplace where there's a demand for skills, whether the schools are better in one place than the other. The generalized point that I'm making to you that is not refutable is that more black people are working today than they were 5 years ago, period.
Well, let me ask you this, Brother Malcolm. Is the United States at war in countries around the globe? Or do they maintain a military presence in Japan, in Iraq, in Iran, all of these places?
No, we don't maintain a military presence in Iran. Yes, we maintain a military presence in Ghana, in Cape Verde, in Liberia.
And the purpose of this military presence is what?
Well, let's look at the record. I think that when American troops, friends of mine that went to Liberia, it was to slop the rape, murder, and pillaging of those innocent Liberians that were trying to maintain a democracy. When we intervened in the war in Biafra in 1970 to stop the same behavior was there. You want to paint America as this evil empire. All empires are evil, whether it's Pax Romana, Pax Britannia, or Pax Americana, including the African empires that brokered slavery to the whites that brought us here in the first place. So if you're going to speak about history, then speak about history and the truth.
So your argument basically is that America is not an empire and everybody has the opportunity to
maybe you should take the wax out of your ears. I said Pax Americana, Pax Britannia, Pax Romania. I did say America was an empire.
Okay. But what it seems like you're arguing is that that's not a problem for us. You seem to be arguing that we should operate inside of that empire and preserve our entity, our identity.
Well, I think you may not be familiar with it. I would suggest that you Google the terminology internal colony. That was an analysis that was made in the mid-60s by true revolutionary brothers, people like Kathleen Cleaver, people like Julius Nyerere, because if you actually look at the rise – the point
and
is,
the point
you just validate
if it's an
the
internal
point
colony,
is,
if it's an internal colony, if it's an internal colony, then that's a problem, is it not?
Well, we are an internal colony. We have been, and I think if we've gone from in the fields in Georgia and Alabama, where I'm from, to being billionaires, I think that internal colony has yielded some benefits. When BET went on the air, when Bounce went on the air, when Oprah Winfrey's network went on the air, the benefits from the internal colony that you want to diminish are right before our eyes. The question is, you can see the glass as half full or half empty. I prefer to see the history as it is and look at the opportunities to actually support cooperative development. Now, you haven't made many facts yet that have stuck.
We're talking about cooperative development. That's what we are, a co-op.
Like the Federation of Southern Land Cooperatives. Brother Malcolm, thank you for your
comment. I'll get off,
Don't get off. But we really do want to have a civil and sober discussion.
Yes.
And obviously, you are correct in your analysis for a certain percentage of our people. And certainly the masses of our people don't benefit and experience.
Never doubt. Never question that. Never
right.
question
so,
that.
So what we are doing in Ulu is presenting a model in the colony, the internal colony, that we think and we conclude will give us a better opportunity to succeed economically. And
well, may I ask this question? May I ask
sure.
this question?
Sure.
Okay. You heard me reference about cooperative models. Ocean
yes.
Square is a cooperative. True Value Hardware is a cooperative. Those
yes.
elementals of the larger economy, those individual franchises are owned by Jewish Americans, Chinese Americans
correct.
To benefit their groups. So
correct.
What is to say Hulu could not get a Firestone cooperative, a Firestone business to support the cooperative development movement we're talking about? If you have a Firestone franchise, have access to tires, how many brothers downstream could benefit from access to those tires in a full-blown co-op?
Yeah. Well, that's a
okay,
discussion.
Okay, that's my point. That's the one thing I just wanted to suggest, that as we talk about endocentricity, you cannot isolate yourself in an economic market. W.B. Du Bois didn't do it. Booker T. Washington didn't do it. Carver didn't do it. When he found the solution to the bowl, remember, I was born in Tuskegee. So the
yeah.
history was have our own, but we cannot isolate ourselves because we will then be destroyed. What you're doing is beautiful.
Well,
and I encourage you to have more
yeah,
experts
but,
on who know this material.
Let's not dominate the discussion. And
oh, no,
okay.
not at all. I was listening
but,
to the brother
but,
about
hold
a few
on,
minutes.
Hold,
before
on,
I got
hold on, hold on, hold on. The you or the we that you speak of has to have an opportunity to come into existence as a player in the economic arena. The only, from my opinion, the only players at this point are for the most part individuals. You mentioned several individuals that are individual players, and then you may point to some of them in the aggregate and the small aggregate. So allow us the opportunity to aggregate our resources, to format ourselves so that we are a player in the economic arena on the earth and in whatever economies we choose to. But I'm going to call you, and I had planned to call you anyway, and I appreciate your expertise and your energy.
I've been out of the country, and it's refreshing
to come back
and hear you all.
Yeah.
I will get off and listen further. I will leave you with this comment. One man can change the world, whether it's the Birmingham boycott, whether it is a leader such as Farrakhan, the Brothers in Islam. Every person, individual, counts. Our aggregation begins with the individual, mind, body, and soul, spiritual enlightenment, and as
yes.
Brother Kwesi pointed out that I agree with, our values. Brothers in Africa, love you. You all are listening. Sit back and listen for the rest of the discussion. God bless you all.
God bless you. Take care.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, Baba Hakima, for your comments. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we proceed?
Yeah,
Baba
one of the... the challenge we just had is instructive because the move to create a mutual group-owned cooperative platform, even when we have been steeped in cooperative formations around the world and cooperative cultures, the fact that we are experimenting with using co-ops as a liberating tool, a economic empowerment tool for an oppressed people, so as a tool of national liberation, it's going to be difficult for some of us. And so it's important that for brothers and sisters on the call to know, Kambizi spoke a little earlier about this being a power move and not a money move. And that's so important. So I just say that, and I apologize to Brother Malcolm because he had reached out to us, and I needed to reach back out to him, and we're going to have some fruitful discussions, and we're probably never going to agree on everything, but one thing is absolutely, how should I say it? One person can inspire, but one person cannot accomplish for the group. The group has to take the mantle. There has to be institutions and systems developed such that the people have those institutions and systems to not only meet their current needs, but to push their capacity to perform into the future. And I mentioned some time ago, and I often say it, that when the Temptations made the song that Papa was a Rolling Stone and all he ever left us was alone, what that says to me is that as those of us who are mature on this phone, our life and our life's energy and worth and whatever value you put on it, if we do not at this particular time call time out and do what is necessary to put in place so that our children and grandchildren will not look backwards and ask, what did we leave them? We're not building institutions. Yes, we're getting rich individually, and we're strutting. But anyway, I don't want to continue to do that. I think there probably are some other brothers and sisters who want to talk, and then we have failed to even go into detail about our model and to anticipate and answer some of the burning questions that our listeners might have and probably do have that are listening from around the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Baba Hakima, for your comments. And, yes, all discussion is beneficial and fruitful. And once again, I would like to encourage our listeners, if you have questions or comments, the number is 929-477-2789. And press the number 1 on your dial, on your keypad, so that we will know that you'd like to be in queue to ask your question and make your comment. And, you know, moving on with our discussion and taking into consideration everything that has been said, that has been offered so far, I really believe that we are at the point where we need to share what is a solution. I don't think there's any doubt that where things stand right now, that all of us as people of Black African descent are not living well. We do not have everything that we need to have in order to meet our needs of our families and to live a life that is beneficial and fruitful. So, Brother Kambizi, going back to you, please comment on what the solution is. Some of us have, you know, have concern that the solution might be in legislation or, you know, who we elect or put in office. But could you comment on what you see as the solution? And then I see we have another caller that has a comment or a question to ask as well. Brother Kambizi?
Thank you, Sister Nanana. Us lifting us as a economic development cooperative is harnessing the $1.3 trillion that flows through Black hands on an annual basis. And if you think about it, if we were to capture just 1% of that $1.3 trillion, that comes out to $13 billion a year that we could utilize to do whatever we needed to do, operate businesses, operate independent school systems, take care of health care needs in our community. So what we're saying is the resources are flowing through our fingers. What a cooperative does is it creates ownership of the business enterprise by the community, by the collective, by the people who work for the business. Everyone is a joint owner in the enterprise, and they participate in receiving the profits of the enterprise collectively. And so that's the simple mechanics of the model. For us, it means a $50 annual membership fee. And then when people are able to purchase a co-op unit in the amount of $1,000. Now, we have people in our community that can purchase several units tonight if they were so inclined to do so. We have others who like the idea and certainly want to be involved. They may not have $1,000 at their fingertips tonight. And so we have what we call the power of 100. These are circles where people contribute $50 or $100 a month each month until they get to their $1,000 purchase price. So there are a number of ways, and if you go to our website, www.uslifting.us.com, usliftingus.com, you will see the various ways that you can join Us Lifting Us. You fill out an application that you're interested, submit it to us, we review it, get back to you, then you pay your $50, and then you also make arrangements for the purchase of your co-op unit at a time that's convenient and in a rate that's convenient for you. If we think about what this enables us to do, there are other groups that are doing it around the country and around the world, and there's absolutely no reason we can't do it here in the United States. We see pooling this money as giving us the capital base to operate other businesses. We've already mentioned Cafe Ulu, the first business that we've launched here in Atlanta. It's an internet cafe, coffee shop, and lounge that is owned by the collective, not one or two people who skim all the profits off the top and drive away in a luxury car at the end of the day. It is an institution, to Baba Hekima's point, that is owned by the community, that will be here to pass forward to the next generation of our children. So that's the basic mechanism. Let me stop there, Sister Nanana. You may have another comment or a question.
Well, thank you very much for the detail that you've added in terms of Us Lifting Us and put emphasis around the whole process of pooling our resources and the benefit that can bring for us, and certainly that concept of ownership, that we can be owners, that we can have our own and do it in a group environment that benefits us. And what I'd like to do now is to open the floor for caller 3440, caller 3440. Do you have a question or a comment? Please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, good evening, Sister Nanana. This is Brother Shabaka out of Baltimore. How are you all doing?
Good evening. Doing well, Brother Shabaka. Doing well. Good to have you with us.
Good, thank you. I came on late. I did have an opportunity to listen to the exchange, and I just wanted to add, I won't take long, maybe a clarification of comments that were being made. And that is that Brother Malcolm, in a sense, is somewhat correct. We live in a stratified the implication might be that we live we live together as one harmonious entity, but we do not. We live in stratifications. You know, they talk about the middle class, the lower class, the underclass, and all this other kind of stuff. Yeah, there are certain people within our race, all right, that are doing very well, all right, in America and on the continent. I just saw an article in the paper the other day. It talked about the millionaires, that most of the billionaires are in Africa, but they're billionaires here in the U.S. Yeah, that represents a very tiny portion of representation within our community, or I say class structure, right? They talked about a 9.9%, which is the upper group, but that 9.9% they had defined as people who had assets about maybe $1.5 million to about $5 million. And then they talked about the 0.1%, and these are supposed to be the people who have control over the production, the process of production, and wealth accumulation. All right, and then, you know, you got the 90%. Well, we're talking about trying to assist the 90%. There are very few people in the 9.9%, and virtually we almost unheard of in that 0.1%. And the higher we go in the class structure, we will tend to sustain the interest of that class structure. That class structure is dominated and controlled by people of European ancestry right now. So, yes, we do have somewhat degree of collaboration, all right, among folks in the upper classes in order to sustain the lifestyle and the wealth that they have accumulated, you know, whether they, you know, black is blue or that kind of stuff. So the cooperative that brother that you and brother Kimbizi have been trying to identify is that we're trying to have a socioeconomic system where the lower classes, or that 90% and below, all right, can reap some benefit, because they're not anywhere in the world. They're not. And that's all I wanted to say. So Brother Malcolm, who was talking, is correct. Yeah, there are very wealthy people, and they're very wealthy people who will tend to collaborate with the what we call the European hegemony in the world, because they're benefiting from that. But the majority of us are not benefiting, and we're trying to create and change that socioeconomic dynamic. That's all
Thank
I have
you
to
so
say,
much.
But it's real good exchange.
Thank you so much, Brother Sibaka, for adding your comments to our dialogue here this evening. It certainly helps to add clarity and to position us so that we can look at another side of this whole discussion, and the points that you've made, that there are those who are doing very well, but it's a small percentage, and we, with us lifting us, are looking at pooling of resources and moving forward in a manner that really benefits larger, much larger numbers in our community. So I appreciate those comments. And we are going to start wrapping up our dialogue here. It has certainly been very robust and very challenging, and out of these types of challenging discussions, we have the opportunity to grow and to really take a look at the strengths of us lifting us. And Us Lifting Us has a website. It's usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com. And so I invite all of our listeners to please go on to our website and look at all of the information that's there to offer to help you to understand and have a greater knowledge about what Us Lifting Us is all about, and the Economic Development Co-op that we are about the business of developing. If you have questions, you can certainly click where it says contact us, give us feedback, and we will be back in touch with you. And you can also call Us Lifting Us at 404-592-2780. 404-592-2780. And for those of you who are at the point where you see that Us Lifting Us is something that can fit and work for you and assist you to reach your personal goals of leaving the legacy for future generations and to be a part of this great initiative that we're moving forward with Ujamaa, the family-centered economics, please click where it says membership and fill out your membership application and send that in so that we can get started with you in being a part of this economic process that is definitely moving forward and destined to be successful, not only here in the U.S., but globally. We have memberships all around the globe. So, Brother Kimbizi, do you have some closing comments for us? And we'll wrap things up and look forward to another discussion next Thursday.
Thank you, Sister Nanana. Again, just saying that what Us Lifting Us represents for our community is a power move. We are in an economic global war, and that we need to build economic institutions that will provide employment for our people, that will give us the resources to take care of the social needs in our community, and that will return a portion of that benefit, those profits, to us personally. So that is what Us Lifting Us represents. And if you are listening and are ready to be serious and focused and intentional about how you use your money and you want to align with brothers and sisters that have the same mindset, then go to the website and fill out an application. Let us hear from you. Sister Nanana, it's always a pleasure to share with you and the Us Lifting Us listening audience and family. We thank you, and we'll be back next week, next Thursday, 9 o'clock, same time.
Thank you so much, Brother Kimbizi, and thank you to all of our listeners out there. We'll see you again next Thursday.
Yeah.